Chapter 119. Down seemingly endless chutes. Write it all down. The things that may seem insignificant now could well be even more so in the future. But what if we are wrong, and there is no future? And so we spill out of the plane, everybody exhausted. The plane, too, exhausted, having been such a long haul. Moored now at the terminal in repose, wings drooping, its belly is opened and an avalanche of luggage comes tumbling out. Then a ramp is connected to its side, a kind of perspex tube contriving the avoidance of any contact with the foreign outside environment for now. And down which we will soon go. Aircrew gather at the door to see us off, smiling but relieved to see the last of us, and of course in far better condition than we are. Slowly released, we spill out, shuffle, pushing and shoving, bleary-eyed and short-tempered, blinking at this new grey world through milky perspex. We have arrived, reborn, metamorphosed, and newly alive. Onwards we shuffle through dingy corridors lined with the most unappealing carpet and flooded with fluorescent light, watched by officers drably dressed in ill-fitting uniforms, tired and disinterestedly indicating the direction that we must go. Onwards, down seemingly endless chutes, ramps and conveyor belts, to be interrogated at a gate, like sheep lining up for the dip. Then, entry. Finally, entry into this new old land we have sought out. But to what purpose be your visit? The inspector asks. Well, for the common good, for the betterment of humanity, for the life of immersion in grand emotion, for the spirit of adventure, for the hell of it, for turns most likely mistakenly taken, for poetry and song and all the other whimsical distractions, the opening of doors, new views from different windows, I think to myself. Visiting family, I finally manage to say, smiling modestly. The officer is unmoved, requires an address and telephone number. Is someone going to phone me? Before thumping a tired rubber stamp crookedly on the corner of my travel document, I pass through the gate into the lounge of the displaced, lost and confused. Jot that down in your ratty little notebook, first mentioned back in Chapter 5. Well, think about it at least. Sometimes that really is enough, as it's all good material. Nuts together, to store away for winter or a rainy day. Notes scribbled in notebooks, back in previous chapters, back there in the hovel, the humble abode, house at Bend In Road, nestled into damp patch of forest where trees fall against each other like drunken sailors heading back to the boat. I don't know if I am thinking about the past or thinking of the future. Could this be what they call jet lag? For now, I have my case to collect. Yes, the very same school case mentioned back in Chapter 106. And probably containing the very same incongruent and dubious possessions. Here it comes, the battered bag, tied together with a piece of rag, corner gaping, an unwashed shirt escaping. I gather my treasure and make my way through customs, where the uniformed ones, who I do not understand at all, point to my bag and mime opening it, for my benefit, I presume. As before, belongings I have few. A comb, a belt, a used Spirex notebook, even worse for wear, a frayed toothbrush, a hand-me-down pullover stretched out of shape, the discarded gecko skin I have left behind me, you'll be pleased to hear, some unwashed socks, a hairbrush with a broken handle, the pump don't work because the vandals took the handle, etc., and a decommissioned library copy of Moby Dick, on the cover of which the Leviathan tail is bearing down on a tipping whaleboat, about to send crew flailing into the unfathomably deep. All of this contained in a schoolgirl's battered school case, the name Wendy scribed inside. So, who would Wendy be? The officer asks.